Turn now to the last case of the morning, which is number 02-1535, the United States against Carmen Hernandez. Mr. Eldon.
May it please the Court, Barry Eldon on behalf of the United States. This is a government appeal from a sentence of a defendant who was convicted of conspiracy in which she and her co-defendant brought into the United States over $20,000 of counterfeit currency and successfully distributed a good chunk of it into circulation. The first issue the government raised...
Does the record indicate how long this activity went on, this distribution of the counterfeit currency?
I think, Judge, that it was basically from January to March of 2001. And they were caught in March of 2001. And the applicable guideline in this case provides a two-level enhancement if any part of the offense occurs outside the United States. And there's no question and there's no dispute in this appeal that particular guideline enhancement applied to this offense. The district court, however, refused to apply that enhancement, and we submit that that was error. The guideline was valid. The guideline was valid under the Tomasino case. Tomasino says that a guideline is presumptively valid. The Congress had a directive in this case and directed the commission to provide an enhancement for international currency cases under Section 470. And the commission, in addressing that particular directive, provided the guideline in question here, which applies to all international.
You could have charged this under 470, could you have not?
I believe we could have, Judge, but we think... But
could we then say that, in effect, the scheme taken as a whole should be looked at, that if the government in its prosecutorial discretion decides to go with 470, it gets the benefit of the guideline. If it decides that what happened overseas was extremely tangential or that there are mitigating circumstances, you don't want to charge 470 and you go with the domestic statute, then you don't get the guideline.
Well, 472 is both domestic and international, and we thought that was a better fit here. And I think the Sentencing Commission has the legislative authority to take the position in addressing the congressional directive, whose objective obviously was to punish more severely international currency crimes, to take the position that whatever the prosecutor decides to charge, we think that to have all defendants who commit the same crime treated the same way, we will apply it across the board. They had the legislative authority to do that. They did not purport in their amendment to implement the congressional directive without any changes. They didn't say that. What they said is we're addressing the congressional directive.
And it all turns on the difference between implement and address.
I think it does, Judge. And by saying that they addressed it, we respectfully submit, in the only reasonable way that a sentencing commission could address it. They said, we will apply an enhancement for all international currency offenses. That was a reasonable approach. The guideline, therefore, was valid, and the district court should have applied it.
I may be missing something, but is there any language by the sentencing commission regarding 2B5.1B4 that indicates an intent to go beyond the legislative director of the ADEPA?
Judge, I think by using the word address rather than implement, because they use the word implement in many other situations, implement implies, and that was, by the way, the word used in the Tomasino case, mm-hmm. which led to the confusion that this court identified. They didn't use the word implement. They said they addressed it, and I think that the natural reading of the word address is that they considered this directive and they promulgated the guideline. And the guideline does address the particular concern of the congressional directive, and it addresses it in a reasonable fashion.
I don't know. I as I say, I may be missing something, but I don't see language that indicates that the commission sought to exceed the congressional directive and enhance sentences for convictions under statutes other than 470.
Your Honor, the approach taken... The approach taken in Tomasino is that there's a presumption that the guideline is valid. And if this court can have minimal confidence that the commission was not misinterpreting a congressional directive, then the guideline is valid. The guideline is not invalidated merely because there is a possibility of misinterpretation. What the sentencing commission did here can reasonably be interpreted, and I would suggest the only reasonable interpretation of what they did here, is they saw the congressional directive. They said, okay, now how can we put a guideline into effect that carried forth the purpose of this directive, which was to penalize more severely international currency offenses. And they did that, and they carried that through, and they had the legislative authority to do that with all international.
Let me ask you something a little different. Do you believe that there is any limit to the amount of currency that was reasonably foreseeable to Ms. Hernandez? For instance, if Ms. Zambrano had an additional $20,000 at her home instead of $4,300, would that be included as well, simply because the possibility of some, you know, additional currency was foreseeable?
It might not, Justice. And we don't take the position that it necessarily would have. And let's take it more extreme. Let's say she brought in $1 million. That would not have been reasonably foreseeable. It was reasonably foreseeable here because what the defendant herself brought in was approximately, as she said in her statement, approximately $10,000. Zambrano brought in $12,500. That's about the same amount. And since it's about the same amount, it was reasonably foreseeable.
But given that Ms. Zambrano gave Ms. Hernandez $4,500 in currency, which was comparable to a half share of what Ms. Hernandez had brought back from Peru, right? How can we say that it was reasonably foreseeable to Ms. Hernandez that Ms. Zambrano had additional counterfeit currency at her home?
Because this court has said many times that a defendant need not know the particulars of the conduct of the co-defendant as long as it can be reasonably foreseeable. And our main point, Judge...
All right, but what amount is reasonably foreseeable? Well, $20,000 is, or is it?
Well, an amount very close to the amount that Hernandez herself brought in, which was $10,000, approximately $10,000.
Well,
that's what she had,
$10,000. $4,300 isn't that close to $10,000.
No, what we're talking about, Judge, is the conduct of Zambrano of bringing into the United States $12,500. That conduct was reasonably foreseeable to Hernandez because Hernandez brought in $10,000. But, Judge, our main point is that the district court applied the wrong legal test. The district court applied a test of knowledge, not, of course, a test of reasonable foreseeability. And that is our principal point. But I would like to address the departure issue, if I could.
So it's clear error, right?
I would say they are both clear. Our position is they are both clear. Number one, he applied the wrong test. There's no doubt about that. And our view is that it would have been, that it is also very clear that it was reasonably foreseeable. But as to the departure issue, the district court said it was departing based on Ferul and Guzman. It did not make any findings as to the conditions of confinement of this defendant, and therefore clearly was not a proper departure under those grounds. And neither was it a proper departure under Bautista. Basically, this defendant is saying that any deportable alien with children gets an automatic per se departure, because that is all we have here. And that does not meet the test of Bautista. Bautista says a departure would be appropriate only in an extraordinary case.
Of course, if the offense was completed 1 month later, there would have been no deportation.
Well, that is what the probation officer said, Your Honor. But what we are saying here, Your Honor, is that departure under Batista can only be done in extraordinary cases. And when the district court departed here, all he said was that she has two young children and a husband who's legally in the United States. And basically, that would mean a per se departure in all instances in which a deportable alien has children. And we think that is inappropriate, inconsistent with Batista, and we respectfully request this court to reverse the sentence.
Thank you, Mr. Eldon. We'll hear now from Mr. Cuff.
May it please the court. My name is Kenneth Kinniff. I represent the appellee, an unusual position in a criminal case. Very nice to be in that position. I think implicit in the government's argument is that the trial judge was intellectually dishonest in trying to reach the decisions that he reached. And basically, the trial judge was very meticulous in coming to his decisions. As Your Honor is aware from the records, Judge Guerra had several hearings with respect to each of the downward departures and had several submissions from the various briefs. And in reaching his decision, he carefully looked at the law and carefully looked at the facts. And basically, because Ms. Hernandez was deportable, the court was aware of that fact, but could have reached a much easier decision by simply finding that she shouldn't receive the two-point enhancement for obstruction of justice, which over objection Judge Dara found.
Is
Hernandez, Your Honor?
Is she still in prison?
Yes, Judge. In fact, as Your Honor can see from what was filed, in the record at 70, the Bureau of Prisons sent a letter to Judge Dara, which said that although he had said that she should receive 4.5 months of work release because she was a deportable alien, she would not be eligible for that. And in fact, although pregnant, was serving her time at Danbury Prison. She was scheduled to be released on August 4th or 6th. I'm not sure what the date was, where the letter would indicate. And it's my understanding, based on a conversation with her husband, that she's still in immigration custody as of today. That is a substantial problem, which is created by the fact she's a deportable alien, which goes to show Judge Darrow was correct when he made his findings.
Judge Darrow was
correct when he made the various findings which he made in terms of that she was entitled to a downward departure.
Can you speak to the Batista case where we said that departure would only be warranted in exceptional circumstances, and why you think this is distinguishable?
The exceptional circumstances in this case is because, first of all, because she is deportable following the Gallo-Vasquez case analysis, because she is deportable, she is in exceptional circumstance. Initially, she is entitled to be considered for a downward departure because the sentence which she received from the trial judge couldn't be served the way he intended it because she was deportable. She spent her time in custody. And additionally, what the court made a finding of was that because of the unique family circumstances, that it would be a draconian result to have her unable to be with her children upon the completion of the sentence in our country. But I think what the judge was going into was showing that because of the circumstances of her being deportable, and although it was a very close call in terms of it was a month later, this wouldn't have been a problem. The court was of the opinion that the draconian results were truly uncalled for.
But he didn't make any reference to the fact that things changed a month later, did he? Or did he in his findings? I don't
believe he. I'm not sure. I know that there were several supplemental reports. I know the judge was aware of it. And I know the probation officer submitted another supplemental report. I believe it probably would be in there. So we would know that would be the fact.
Can you speak to this Tomasino case and explain why is this case different from Tomasino based on address, that address language? And also speak to the question of wouldn't the commission had to have known what it was doing when it drafted 2B5.1B5?
Judge, I think that this court's decision in Tomasino talked about whether it was implementing or addressing the particular statutory language as directed by Congress, and it's the defendant's belief that the language which the commission followed was specific for Section 472 as opposed to 470, and could have followed and could have made Section 470 also part of the statutory scheme had it so chosen to do so. And by specifically excluding it, the court, I believe, I'm sorry, the court should follow the language of the statute itself. The statute on its face only refers to Section 470 for enhancement purposes, not Section 472.
Speaking to the knowledge that Ms. Hernandez had, even if she didn't know that Ms. Zambrano had the additional $4,300 in her house, wasn't that reasonably foreseeable given their close collaboration and how she got involved in it, how she got her involved in it, and their various trips?
To the contrary, Your Honor, respectfully. Ms. Hernandez brought back $10,000. She had no knowledge. There's no knowledge, and there is no showing of any factual basis for the fact that you would have any knowledge that Mrs. Zambrano brought back more than $9,000, because the funds were split when they both tried to pass the funds the day they were both apprehended.
Yeah, but I'm saying even if she didn't know and there was no evidence that she knew, wasn't it reasonably foreseeable?
Judge, there's no way of it. There's no way of it being reasonably foreseeable. All that she knew was that the co-defendant went down and brought back some money. There's no factual basis in the record to show there's reasonably foreseeable what the amount would be. And I think the trial judge, after several hearings, made a correct finding. And it's the same position he took with respect to the co-defendant. The court has no other questions out there in my brief.
Thank you, Mr. Keir.
Your Honor, the district court made no finding that this defendant's conditions of confinement would be more onerous than contemplated by the guideline, and therefore, under Gallo-Vasquez, she was not entitled to a departure on that basis. And the district court made a finding initially that the amount of money that Zambrano brought in was reasonably foreseeable. He vacated that finding, but he never made another finding that it was not reasonably foreseeable. All he said was she did not know, and that was insufficient. We ask the court to reverse. Thank you, Mr. Carlin.
Mr. Kuhn, if you serve by appointment of the court, and you have the deep thanks of the court for the fine job that you've done on behalf of your client, and we thank your colleague as well for the fine job that was done on the brief in the case. Our thanks indeed to both counsel, and the court will rise until tomorrow at 9:30.